This is Jim Engster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll hear from former State Senator Elbert Lee Guillory, Republican from Opelousas, and East Baton Rouge Parish Democratic Party Chair Carolyn Hill, on the status of minority voters in our state and the controversy about President Trump's remarks concerning Haiti and other countries. Guillory is heading minority outreach efforts for the Louisiana GOP, and currently there are about 22,000 minority Republicans in our state, over 700,000 black Democrats. Professor Lauren Wright of Princeton University will comment on the role of First Lady Melania Trump amid the controversy swirling through the Oval Office. Today is the 51st week anniversary of President Trump taking the oath of office. We're 9 days away, 8 days rather, away from his first year anniversary as president. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. In Baton Rouge, you can dial us at 297-5633, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. In-house is Carolyn Hill. She's the Democratic Party Chair for East Baton Rouge Parish, and also joining us is former State Senator Elbert Guillory, who is Director of Minority Outreach for the Louisiana GOP. Now, in Louisiana right now, it's a predominantly Democratic state by voter registration. That remains the case, despite the fact that Republicans are winning statewide elections, with every election held, every elected office statewide held by a Republican, except for the office of governor. But with about 22,000 African-American Republicans and over 700,000 African-American Democrats, there is a big disparity. Elbert Guillory is a former Democrat, and he has many videos that he has produced over the last several years. And Elbert Guillory, your thoughts about why you believe that the GOP should be home for black voters in Louisiana.
What we're doing, Jim, and good morning, what we're doing simply isn't working. If you drive through minority communities, you see high unemployment. You see dilapidated schools, children not being educated. Our neighborhoods, our communities are very unsafe. And all of those, the joblessness, the lack of education, and the lack of safety, all relate to policies from the Democrat Party. I know I was there.
Carolyn Hill, you, as noted, are the leader of the Democratic Party in the largest parish in the state of Louisiana. And it is a case in which this parish, East Baton Rouge Parish, has consistently over the last several years voted for Democrats, from President Obama to Hillary Clinton to Foster Campbell for the United States Senate, for Mary Landrieu in her reelection quest, and Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome. But statewide, it's a different story. Why do you think that the Democratic Party should be home not only to minority voters, but to other voters in our state?
Well, good morning, Jim. It's quite interesting, as you was giving us the numbers, and you said over 700,000 citizens are registered Democrats and only 22,000.
African-Americans.
Yeah, African-Americans, yes, when you talk about the minority voters, are Republicans. And what is quite interesting is that each time that the Democratic Party have individuals that are running for office, and you said it, you articulated very well, that when you look at statewide, it's Republicans that are actually being elected in those positions. And when you look at it overall as a whole of the state, that we have majority Democrats. But let me just go back to East Baton Rouge Parish. Yes, our parish has been one of the parishes that has been diligently electing Democrats within our districts. Now, just to go back on to what former Senator Guillory said in regards to our communities, he's correct. I mean, our communities are, you know, when you look at the school system, when you look at communities overall, and you look at how the crime has increased. But when you think about it, those individuals that are in office that are implementing these policies and legislations, majority of the legislator is Republicans. And so when you have those issues and not being able to understand the critical issues in those communities, it's kind of hard to be able to advocate or even support policies to help, you know, those communities. But overall, I can say as a Democratic Party, we are working diligently to educate our communities, especially minorities, on the various issues as we continue to progress and bring more generations to come as recruitment.
All right. To look at the numbers updated as of right now by Secretary of State Tom Shedler's office in Louisiana right now, there are 723,533 black Democrats, only 22,531 black Republicans. But on the other side of the racial spectrum, 898,000 white Republicans and 535,000 white Democrats. So, Elbert Lee Guillory, we're looking somewhat like Mississippi now, in which whites are overwhelmingly voting Republican in our state, and blacks are overwhelmingly voting Democratic. Is that inherently bad, or is that just the way it's going to be moving forward?
Jim, I'll be honest with you. There should be one overriding question. What is good for America? What's good for Louisiana? If the issues are presented to both Democrats and Republicans, if we can say this is a good plan to correct the lack of education in our cities, in our urban areas, then both Republicans and Democrats should vote overwhelmingly for that plan. Same thing is true about safety. Same thing is true about criminal justice reform. If we can unify and not get caught up in D's and R's, but what's good for Americans, I think we'll advance much more quickly.
Carolyn Hill?
Well, that's quite interesting. Well, I have to agree with Senator Guillory on this one. I agree. I totally agree. And as a registered Democrat, and I've fought for many issues as the former Bessie representative for District 8, and majority of the people that I represented were impoverished areas and very rural areas. And of course, I mean, majority of my constituent base were Democrats. But at the time when I made decisions on what was best for education for my district, I didn't look at D or R. I looked at what was right and what was going to help the majority of the citizens that I represented. And there were some times that I took a stance, i.e. Common Core, which was at the time a Republican pushed at that time and Democrats. But for me, it was what was right for the community and for our children to move forward to get the education that they need to be productive citizens. So I think overall, as we move forward and as this country continues to grow, I think that we need to begin to educate our people and educate them on the issues. I mean, because even when I do my research on both parties, there are some things that overlap and there are some things that doesn't overlap. But when you're able to make an educated decision on issues, I think that will make our country much better and then having this political regime. But we know that's a part of the process and that will be.
877-217-5757 is your number if you'd like to join the conversation with former Bessie member Carolyn Hill, who is also the head of the Democratic Party in East Baton Rouge Parish, and former State Senator Elbert Guillory, lawyer from Opelousas, who is leading minority outreach for the Republican Party. And we, of course, we're on the brink of celebrating Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday come Monday, and this is a pertinent topic. And President Trump opened some wounds yesterday. The headline in the New York Times, in vulgar terms, Trump disparages some immigrants. President Trump, on Thursday, writes the newspaper of record, balked at an immigration deal that would include protections from people in Haiti and some nations in Africa, demanding to know at a White House meeting why he should stop accepting immigrants from S-hole countries rather than people from places like Norway. That's according to people with direct knowledge of the conversation. Mr. Trump's remarks, the latest example of his penchant for racially tinged remarks denigrating immigrants, left members of Congress from both parties attending the meeting in the cabinet room alarmed and mystified. Senator Guillory, your thoughts about the new controversy swirling about our president?
First, let me say that he has denied using that term. However, setting his denial aside, last year, or actually at the end of 16, Americans decided that they wanted a straight-talking businessman, not another mealy-mouthed politician. And that's what they got. I mean, Trump says whatever comes to mind. I certainly do not defend. I'm a Republican. I do not defend what he says. He has done some very good things, and I defend those things that he has done. But just as I would not expect him to defend what comes out of Elbert Gillery's mouth, Elbert Gillery is certainly not going to defend what comes out of his mouth.
Carolyn Hill, your thoughts about the president's alleged remarks.
Well, I'll say this. I don't know if he denied it or not. But what I will say is I can go by what the media has put out and what I've read. And, you know, what is so interesting as a president, you know, what really makes America so special is that we're able to welcome the best and the brightest in this world, regardless of the country of the origin. And that's what makes us so unique. And then when you have an individual that is so much in the position that he's in the United States, in the position that he's holding, and individuals that look up to him, that voted for him, just as an overall, to make those kind of statements is very degrading. Not only degrading, it's very disappointing for a leader, whether he's a businessman or not, just to make those kind of comments nationally, whether he said he did it or not, it was made. And it's such a degrading for our country, not only for our country, for our citizens. Because if you feel that way, being in a leadership position, there are some things you should not just articulate.
Well, President Trump has opened some new wounds. He has denied using the S-hole comment, but it took several hours for him to tweet this. And others present at the meeting have said definitively that he did use that term to describe people from Haiti and other African countries. We'll talk more with Elbert Gillery and Carolyn Hill after this timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your numbers again, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, outside the capital region, 877-217-5757, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. East Baton Rouge Parish Democratic Party Chair Carolyn Hill, former member of the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, and former State Senator Elbert Gillery, who's leading minority outreach efforts for Louisiana Republicans, trying to entice more GOP members from the minority community. Currently, there are 22,531 black Republicans and 723,533 black Democrats in the state of Louisiana. A listener asked about other party black members. 181,778 either independent or no party affiliation for Louisiana black residents, voters. 877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Senator Gillery and Carolyn Hill. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yes, Senator Gillery, given your overriding standard, is it good for America to have a president that cons students at the now-defunct Trump University, that goes around using the P word, that uses profanity, corroborated by eyewitness Senator Dick Durbin, to describe developing countries as somehow unworthy of assistance?
Senator Gillery, your thoughts about Dan stating that the president has used vulgarity before, according to witnesses. Is this a relevant matter in his leadership of the country and of the free world?
I think that what Ms. Hill said just before we went to break, she said that America welcomes the best and brightest from all nations. And I absolutely agree with that. For us to accept people from war-torn places, places that we are conducting war in, so that we've killed their uncles and their brothers, and they come here and they're mad with us and they want to blow us up. No, they should not be here. That's not in America's best interest. People with diseases, when there was the Ebola outbreak, we shut the doors very, very quickly. Diseases we should not open our doors to. People with violence, the MS-13, those people with drugs and murderers, we should not open our doors to those people. But welcoming the best and brightest from every nation, absolutely. It is to the advantage of America to do that.
Carolyn, What about the president's first 51 weeks? Has he united our country or has he divided it?
Well, I will say this, and this is what I've seen and what I've read. He has divided the country as a whole. And just to piggyback on what former Senator Guillory stated, you know, when he made these derogatory statements, you know, he focused on African Central Americans and Caribbean countries. And being my family, being natives of the Caribbean islands of the Bahamas, you know, these individuals, you know, were individuals that came to America to help build America. And to make those statements, you know, he's further dividing us as a people and as a Republican Party that's trying to recruit African Americans and having these type of statements being made by the commander chief, the president. I mean, what would possess them to think that, you know, minorities would want to be a part of, you know, a party that don't even value them as individuals that's coming from the chief of, you know, the president, you know. And so those are the things that he has to be mindful of. You know, not only he's the president, but he's representing a party, too, which is the Republican Party. And that's when he speaks, mm-hmm. when President Trump speaks, the first thing people think of some of the things that he's saying is correlated to what the Republican Party
All right. Well, values. Representative Mia Love, a congresswoman from Utah, a Republican who is of Haitian descent, demands an apology from our president, saying his comments were, quote, unkind, divisive, elitist, and fly in the face of our nation's values. For a Republican, especially one who is a minority like you, Senator Guillory, does it make it challenging when the president creates these dramatic controversies that perhaps take away from his agenda?
Without a question, without a doubt, many of the things that the president has said over the last year has presented us some challenges. But once again, I do not defend his words, but what he has done, appointing Justice Gorsuch, eliminating red tape on businesses, creating energy independence for America, veterans health care, appointing Betsy DeVos to revamp education in America, his new tax bill, the crackdown on MS-13, border security, the new $2 billion program to address homelessness that Secretary Carson announced yesterday. All of those things, his action.
All right. Well, Secretary Carson is the only African-American member of his cabinet, I think. Is that unfortunate?
I would like to have seen more. I believe that Richard Nixon is the greatest president that I've seen in my lifetime.
Richard Nixon.
Richard Nixon had a large number of minority persons working in his administration.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with Senator Guillory and Carolyn Hill. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Gilbert. Yeah, I know. I saw in the Advocate this morning that we have about a million of our citizens here in Louisiana that are on Medicaid right now, and since our state has, I think, about 4 million total in terms of population, that's a pretty significant number of people who now have health care. I want to see a peace dividend, and I think Mr. Guillory agrees that being in Afghanistan and being in Iraq and having so many billions of our tax dollars go towards that. I mean, we need that back here. I think we should be going in that direction, and that's something that I would applaud the president if he could accomplish.
All right. Well, you're a military veteran. We've had excursions that were initiated by President Bush that are still ongoing. Is that something that's a drain on the budget and on the soul of the country?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. I agree so much with your caller. We need to spend American dollars on American people. Yes, Mr. Bush got us involved in some insane things. Mr. Obama got us involved in some insane things in Syria and Libya. And those have come back to bite us in the ear.
Well, is it analogous, Carolyn Hill, what happened with President Bush and in his 8 years, and what happened under President Obama in his 8 years?
Well, I'll say this, and not trying to be biased, but when you look at President Bush in his tenure as president, our nation was in a deficit. And then when President Obama took office in his tenure, his last years, I mean, we were progressing.
But we're running heavy deficits under both presidents.
Yeah, we were. But we were able to progress in regards to.
Obama did cut the deficit, but yeah. It's at historic highs. And it looks like President Trump is, based on his tax plan and its review by the Congressional Budget Office, it's going to increase the deficit some more. That doesn't appear to be a big issue anymore.
You're right, because you haven't heard anything about it. But my point of the matter is that during the Obama administration, there were some good initiatives that had taken place in regards to employment, economic development, health care, et cetera. And I hope moving forward that even though those policies were put in place, that we will continue. Because at the end of the day, Jim, for me, it's about the people that we're serving. I know we all have our own ideologies of what our views are and what our values and morals are. But at the end of the day, when the people suffer, we all suffer. And so I hope continue to move forward.
877-217-5757. We'll spend some more time with Carolyn Hill, who heads the Louisiana Democratic Party in East Baton Rouge Parish, and former State Senator Elbert Guillory from Opelousas, lawyer and head of minority outreach for the state GOP. They're here to talk about both state and national politics, and we'll be back after the news with Karen Henderson with more Talk Louisiana on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on a cool Friday in our community. 877-217-5757. Allie Baltazar is producing locally. The number is 297-5633, and our email's talk@talklouisiana.org. Elbert Guillory and Carolyn Hill. Elbert, the Republican, Carolyn, Democrat, on opposite sides of the spectrum, and certainly have differing opinions about where our state and country stands right now. 877-217-5757. William in Opelousas, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. And I heard Senator Guillory say that President Trump did so much for the veterans, and I'm a veteran, and I'm not aware of anything that he's done since he's been in that's going to help the veterans. Also, he talked about Judge Gorsuch. One thing that is done by appointing Judge Gorsuch to talk about abortion, and even if they would overturn Roe v. Wade, abortion would just be illegal. It would never stop. And I thank you for taking my call.
All right. Your thoughts about William in Opelousas, your hometown, making some remarks challenging your remarks, Senator Guillory.
With respect to Justice Gorsuch and the abortion matter, a million little American babies are murdered every year. That is a blot on America. And I'm hoping that Gorsuch will rein it in and possibly change that. With respect to veterans' health care, we had an absolute mess under the last administration. And finally, this administration is taking over and redesigning veterans' health care.
Carolyn, what about the abortion issue in the minority community? Is it a major issue with black voters?
Well, I'll say this. When you think about abortions, I mean, you will probably have within the Democratic Party, it will probably be split because of the Christianity, thou shalt not kill. And so based on one's biblical principles of what their principles are, they may be pro-life, they may be pro-choice, but doesn't matter, they may still be a registered Democrat. And when you look at, you know, as a Democrat, their philosophy when it comes to abortion is pro-choice, including the right of a pregnant woman to obtain abortions, meaning it's their decision. But when you look at us as a whole, you know, we'll probably have some within our party that may be pro-life because of their biblical principles.
J.D. in Abbeville. J.D., good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Elbert Guillory and Carolyn Hill.
Good morning, Mr. Jim, and to your guests. I just had a suggestion. Maybe Mr. Guillory might be more able to reach the ear of Donald Trump than the other guests. But it's just that, you know, since many Haitians, you know, people with ethnic ties to Haiti might have been offended. What if, and he's kind of upset with China because of their trade deficit, could there be any possibility that some of those manufacturing jobs that China has could be transferred to some of the people in Haiti, or some companies could try to start up some economic building progress in Haiti, and you know, without it might be a way to kind of help out the Haitian people.
All right, thank you, JD. I don't think the president's going to move in that direction, but what about today, by the way, is the 8-year anniversary of the horrible earthquake in Haiti. It is a country with many, many challenges. I don't think it's an S-hole, but Senator Guillory, what could the United States do to help the people of Haiti and other underdeveloped countries?
I think that J.D.'s point is really well taken. Some economic development, helping the people to develop their own agricultural. Haiti is a wonderful country. It has a great agricultural potential, and the people are very industrious. Yes, some companies could relocate into Haiti. I believe that that's a great idea.
All right. Here's a comment from Zachary in Capitol Heights saying, in his opening comments, Mr. Guillory said something along the lines of many of the issues troubling the African-American community were caused by Democratic policies. I know I was there. He's quoting you, Senator. Could Mr. Guillory specify some of the policies and how they have negatively impacted the African-American community? What policies fostered by Democrats have hurt the African-American community, in your judgment?
Education is a perfect example. By using the public school system solely and by using it as a protected fiefdom, there has been no competition. More than 60% of African-American children cannot read or write at grade level. That is atrocious in this country. And still the Democrats have fought everything, like charter schools, and they fought against vouchers, anything to keep little children in those rotten classrooms.
All right. Well, that's your area, Carolyn Hill. You remember the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. My impression is that you probably have a different point of view than does Senator Guillory.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, Jim. As a former Bessie representative for District 8, which I represented a very large majority of impoverished areas and very rural areas, what I would say, the policies that were put in place, even when we look at the education reform packet that was under former Governor Bobby Jindal, being a Bessie representative during that time, some of those reform initiatives that was placed into the reform packet was not beneficial for minorities of some children at all. I'm going to speak for my district, which was majority minority district. And when you look at the voucher system, and I worked very diligently in New Orleans and worked with, because, you know, after Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans was a city that really was penetrated with the voucher system because of New Orleans public school system and Katrina, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what we find was that the vouchers that were put in place on paper, it looked great, but the implementation and the practice wasn't. From experience, going into those schools, going into some of those churches, and a lot of times they had selected admissions, even with some of those charter schools in New Orleans as well. And so now, as we speak, now that I'm not a member of the board anymore, but a lot of those charter schools have been returned to Orleans Parish School District. And so I'll just say this, when you look at our traditional public system, one of the things that we need to look at as a whole is that, yeah, it is a system, and, you know, we do have the status quo that what the reform will say, but at the end of the day, Jim, all our children are hurting in all systems, whether it's a traditional setting, a charter setting, or a voucher setting. What we need to begin is to put the funding where it needs to be in those areas to help those teachers, to give resources, and to make sure our children have what they need so they can be academically successful.
Well, thank you for joining us, Carolyn Hill and Senator Elbert Guillory, and we look forward to having you both back again very soon. Certainly this education topic is one that will have relevance for all the years to come, but we look forward to hearing from you on this and other topics. We're joined now by Lauren Wright. Professor Wright is a lecturer in politics and public affairs at Princeton University. She teaches courses on the American presidency and executive power, women in politics, and political communication. And Dr. Wright is a board member of the White House Transition Project and the author of On Behalf of the President, Presidential Spouses in White House Communication Strategy Today. Good morning, Professor Wright.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to hear your voice. Now, Melania Trump has been First Lady of the United States for 51 weeks as of today, and political observers still are somewhat uncertain what to make of her. What's your impression of the First Lady after almost a year as the most prominent person at the president's side?
I think the reason why people don't know quite what to make of her is because we haven't seen as much of her or heard as much from her as we have from previous First Ladies. What I really noticed in my research is that what First Ladies do is they pick policy issues that frame the administration's agenda. They do anything they can to help the president's policy agenda, make the president look good. And what's fascinating to me about Mrs. Trump is she's really not following in those footsteps too much. And I think that she could really help the administration if she wanted to, but she appears to have her own plans, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that either.
Well, in his book, Michael Wolff in Fire and Fury says the First Lady cried on election night that she did not want her husband to win the election, knowing the implications of what it would be to her and her family. She, by the way, has denied this, but nonetheless, it is a heavy burden, isn't it?
It's a tremendous burden, and the reason why it's so heavy is not only that First Ladies have been speaking more and more in public, have been involved in more and more projects, and we actually know they're more active than vice presidents when the measure is speeches now, but it's pressure because First Ladies are seen as an extension of the president. And so what I wrote about in an article in The Hill this morning is that First Ladies, like Melania Trump, are many times held accountable for their husbands, even when what they're doing has nothing to do with their husbands. And so I think we've seen this a lot with the Trumps lately, especially with Mrs. Trump's cyberbullying initiative.
Is it somewhat ironic that President Trump is right now being criticized for his stance on other countries and immigrants, and his wife is an immigrant?
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think it's fair to hold the First Lady accountable for things she says and does, but I don't think it's fair to hold her accountable for everything that President Trump says, whether it's racist or sexist. And I think this is an example of an area Mrs. Trump actually has a lot to contribute, because she does identify with the experience of immigrants. She did have to learn English when she immigrated to the United States. But if she decides to stay out of that debate altogether, that's her prerogative.
Our guest for a little while longer is Dr. Lauren Wright of Princeton University. Her book is On Behalf of the President, Presidential Spouses and White House Communication Strategy Today. Your number is 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you're staying warm on a chilly Friday in our state, and bound to get colder over the weekend. But Dr. Lauren Wright is joining us, and I'm sure it's colder where she is. She's a lecturer in politics and public affairs at Princeton. Her book is On Behalf of the President, Presidential Spouses and White House Communication Strategy Today. Today in the New York Times, a story about Melania Trump. Our First Lady reads, nearly a year into her tenure as First Lady, and after a week of intense scrutiny prompted by a new book that claims she dreaded life in the White House, Melania Trump has hired a director of policy to advance her nascent platform. Her choice is 27-year-old Reagan Thompson, who previously served as executive assistant on the National Security Council. First Ladies, as you note, Professor Wright, are now expected to get involved in some issues, and some have embraced different types of issue. The last First Lady certainly was a champion about fighting obesity, particularly childhood obesity. But is it a necessity that the First Lady of the United States gets involved in any issue at all?
It's not a necessity, but it's a huge advantage. So you cited Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative. What a lot of people don't remember is that that was really meant to be a frame for the Affordable Care Act, similarly to how Laura Bush's initiative, Ready to Read, Ready to Learn, her literacy initiative, was a frame for No Child Left Behind. So it's a lot of pressure on First Ladies, as we were just discussing. And these staff members, like the staffer Mrs. Trump just hired, are often really highly specialized in a particular policy area. So this operation of picking an agenda item, attaching it to the administration's policy agenda, has become really regular, very organized. And so I'll be very curious to see what Mrs. Trump decides to do going forward.
Well, she is a First Lady unlike any before. She is 24 years junior to her her husband. The 71-year-old president has a generation of experience ahead of his 47-year-old wife. She is from another land, and she is his third wife, and has a relatively young child that she is dealing with as well. This is a situation that is somewhat unconventional, but is it any big deal? Are the American people really concerned about what's going on with the First Family?
You know, I'm not sure it's a big deal, but they certainly do want to hear from the First Lady. Americans are fascinated with First Families and First Ladies in particular. You can see that Mrs. Trump has the highest favorability ratings of anybody in the administration right now. So I think the way to look at it is, wow, isn't this interesting? We have a First Lady who is not required to do any of this policy advocacy or speeches or interviews or projects. She chooses not to. But if she did, it could help her husband out a lot. And this president is certainly someone who seems to crave self-sabotage and drama in certain ways, and he could be helped by having someone who's viewed as apolitical, who is more popular, vouching for him, but she chooses not to, and I think that's really fascinating. We haven't seen this mm-hmm. in a very long time.
Now, Tracy in Baton Rouge asked about the First Lady's her quest to get rid of cyberbullying, and noting that the president, of course, is noted for bullying people on the World Wide Web. Is there a disconnect there?
That is what the narrative has been lately. And so this is an example of something the First Lady's doing that's actually not convenient for the administration. It's probably the toughest issue for her to pick because of that perceived hypocrisy. But she's doing this anyway. And so, you know, I think women's rights activists and feminists need to take a fair look at this, because in many ways, responsibilities that are put on First Ladies of the United States reinforce gender norms as many ways as they challenge them, because they're expected to advocate for their husbands and put everything aside to help their husbands. So by not doing this, I think Melania Trump deserves to at least get some recognition for doing her own thing, and that's really what she's been doing.
Okay, another listener, Dr. Wright, asks how it would have been different had Bill Clinton been the first gentleman, if his wife had been elected, which of course she almost was. I would imagine it would be strikingly different.
Great questions here. Oh my gosh, I've had so much fun listening to your listeners and your guests, but that's a great question. I don't think, actually, Jim, that it would be that different, and I'll tell you why. The best indication of what we have of what First Ladies or spouses will do in the White House is what they do on the campaign trail. And so if you recall, the Clinton campaign was trying so hard to sort of set expectations about what President Clinton would have done. And what he would have done, I think, is helped on economic advising, picked these projects that frame his wife's agenda, and his strength is as a communicator, so I think he would have been mobilized as a communicator, and that's not so different at all from past first ladies, actually.
But in Bill Clinton's case, I suspect he would have been talking incessantly, which is what he does and does very well, and Melania Trump doesn't do much talking at all.
Yes, she would be more the deviation here. Bill Clinton would actually be more the norm in the situation we're talking about, which is surprising.
Well, as we look ahead to 2020, which is just 2 years away, the president gives every indication that he will run for re-election. Will Melania Trump be an asset in that endeavor?
She would absolutely be an asset if she chooses to be so. And so what my research shows, survey research specifically, is that people are more responsive in a positive way to the same appeal coming from Melania Trump than they are to Ivanka Trump, Mike Pence, the president himself advocating for himself. So again, we see in these hypothetical situations that she could really be an asset. And the particular areas in which she's strongest in these surveys are issues where we're asked to evaluate the president's character and his personality. So these things like, is the president trustworthy? Does he care about people like me? Those things presidential spouses are particularly effective at. And so if she wanted to help, she certainly could. I don't know if we'll see much more of her than we did this past time.
Dr. Wright from Princeton, another listener, Gina, says the first daughter, Ivanka, has been getting far more attention than has Melania Trump. Is that an unusual development?
It is very unusual. And what's unusual about it in particular is that Ivanka Trump has, of course, an official post in the White House, in the president's administration. She has her own job and her own responsibilities. And so the second she took that job and decided to be an official part of the administration, she lost some of this appeal that family members have because they're outsiders. So when we survey people again, they really see Ivanka Trump as just another partisan, another member of the Trump administration. So she doesn't really have the same appeal that Melania Trump does because she's seen as just another Trump staffer, whereas Melania Trump is seen to have this personal relationship, this non-professional connection to the president, and so she's viewed as more authentic sometimes. So it's really interesting. Had Ivanka Trump chosen to stay out of the administration, she might have been able to be more helpful in a lot of ways, I think.
Well, we thank you for joining us, Professor Lauren Wright of Princeton University. The author of On Behalf of the President, Presidential Spouses and White House Communication Strategy Today. You can follow Dr. Wright on Twitter at Dr. Lauren Wright. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Stay warm.
Okay.
And we'll be back come Monday, but a couple of notes. So we did want to note the passing of a true icon in the media in our community, Buckskin Bill Black, who later became a prominent school board member. Was a staple with the Buckskin Bill show, aired in the afternoon, and of course, Storyland in the morning on WAFB, 1955 through 1988. At the time, it held the national record for the longest-running children's show, shifted to a Saturday morning-only show, but was canceled a year later. He retired from the media in 1990, and then was re-entering the public eye shortly thereafter in 1994 when he was elected to the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. But Buckskin Bill was a huge part of the community and the Capitol for several decades, and a couple of generations were familiar with his work. Charles Lucier has a fine profile of him in today's Advocate. The Saints are 5-point underdogs Sunday in Minnesota, three wins away from winning another world title. It's been 8 years, but Minnesota beat the Saints in the opener. We'll see how it goes Sunday. We'll talk about that on Monday, and Martin Luther King Day Jr., the celebration of his life, will include a visit with Ernest Gaines, who will be celebrating his birthday as well with us come Monday. And it was 49 years ago today that Joe Willie Namath led the New York Football Jets to victory in Super Bowl III. They were 17-point underdogs and beat the Baltimore Colts 16-7 in Miami, Florida's Orange Bowl. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.